Well, we are here with Beth Seifert. She's our Bible study teacher, and you can find all the notes on our Bible studies tab, along with the podcasts. And we just highly encourage you to use the materials and have your own guided Bible studies. Thanks for joining us, Beth.
Thanks, Amy. Well, today we're going to pick back up with David, who is running from his son Absalom and is trying to take the fight out of the city. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to 2 Samuel. We're going to be in chapter 16, verses 1 through 14 today. When David had passed a little beyond the summit, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of donkeys saddled, bearing 200 loaves of bread, 100 bunches of raisins, 100 of summer fruits, and a skin of wine. And the king said to Ziba, "Why have you brought these?" Ziba answered, "The donkeys are for the king's household to ride on, the bread and the summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for those who faint in the wilderness to drink." And the king said, "And where is your master's son?" Ziba said to the king, "Behold, he remains in Jerusalem." For he said, "Today the house of Israel will give me back the kingdom of my father." Then the king said to Ziba, "Behold, all that belonged to Mephibosheth is now yours." And Ziba said, "I pay homage. Let me ever find favor in your sight, my lord the king." When King David came to Bahurim, there came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. And as he came, he cursed continually. And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David. And all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And Shimei said as he cursed, get out, you man of blood, you worthless man. The Lord has avenged on you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. See, your evil is on you, for you are a man of blood." Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and take off his head." But the king said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? If he is cursing because the Lord has said to him, 'Curse David,' who then shall say, 'Why have you done so?'" And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, "Behold, my own son seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamite? Leave him alone and let him curse. For the Lord has told him to. It may be that the Lord will look on the wrong done to me, and that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing today." So David and his men went on the road, while Shimei went along on the hillside opposite him, and cursed as he went, and threw stones at him, and flung dust. And the king and all the people who were with him arrived weary at the Jordan. And there he refreshed himself. Okay, we first met Ziba back when David was looking for a member of Saul's household to show kindness to on account of Jonathan. Ziba was the servant who came forward telling David about Mephibosheth. At that time, Ziba was in charge of the fields that belonged to Mephibosheth because Mephibosheth was lame and he couldn't work the fields. Then when David honored Mephibosheth and brought him to his table and welcomed him into the palace, he told Ziba and his family to take care of the land for Mephibosheth. And all that were in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants as well at that time. However, here we find that Ziba comes to David with food from Mephibosheth's fields and is offering them as if they are his own. He then tells David that Mephibosheth, who is lame, remember, and can't leave the palace unless someone carries him out, is hoping that David's ousting by Absalom means that he will get to be king instead of either David or Absalom. Now seriously, this makes no sense. Mephibosheth isn't a threat. He can't fight for his own claim on the throne. He can hardly walk. Mephibosheth had it made when he was living with David. Why now would he assume that he was going to be able to have any power with Absalom taking over the world? Ziba is doing what profits himself here. He seizes the opportunity to ingratiate himself to David by taking donkeys loaded with food and drink from Mephibosheth's fields and brings it to David and the people with him. Picture how welcome that food must have been to them all. They were hungry. They were ready to eat. But of course, Mephibosheth is nowhere to be found. And there's no one around to verify Ziba's story. So when Ziba tells David that Mephibosheth has designs on the throne, now that David is in exile, David reacts without being able to verify the facts. David was far too quick to believe the worst of Mephibosheth here instead of taking the time to see what was really going on. You can tell, however, that what David is being told is not what he expected. His very first question to Ziba was, "Where is Mephibosheth?" He expected Mephibosheth to be there. Granted, David is running for the hills at this point, and Ziba chose the time to bring his petition shrewdly. He knows David is distracted and is already hurting from the betrayal by his son. It wouldn't take much to convince him that Mephibosheth betrayed his kindness, too. Thus, David gives Ziba all of Mephibosheth's property. Ziba profits from David's rush, which was exactly what he intended. We'll see more of this conclusion later about Mephibosheth's side of the story in a couple of chapters. But David is now in exile, again. He has made arrangements for spies to remain in Jerusalem. He has taken care of God's ark. He has made a judgment on behalf of Ziba. And now a relative of Saul has come out to pour salt on David's wounds. He comes out and curses David. He curses him for killing those of Saul's line, which, in case you missed it, David didn't do that. They were killed in battle, and he wasn't even there. He accuses David of being an enemy of God because of all the battles he has fought. Again, not true. God's purpose for David was tied up in battle. God had different plans for David's son, but first the battles had to be fought and won in order for Solomon to be able to build the temple and reign as he one day will. Abishai, Joab's brother, keep in mind, wants to kill Shimei for his cursing. Abishai was the same one who went into Saul's tent with David and wanted to kill Saul for David as Saul and all of his men lay in an unnatural sleep. But David, he stops him. David tells Abishai that his own son seeks to kill him. Shimei spouting off here isn't going to make him feel worse than he already does. It remains to be shown to David whether this cursing is God's will or not, and David won't act until he is sure one way or the other. Remember, David wouldn't kill Saul, who was trying to kill David, because Saul was anointed by God to be king. David isn't going to mess with someone if God has sent them. And David reminds Abishai that although Absalom, his own son, is trying to kill him, David didn't try to kill Absalom back. He hasn't sent assassins. He's trying to save as many people as he can at this point. Why on earth would he kill Shimei at this point in time when all Shimei is doing is cursing? His own son is out for the throne and for his blood. David also knows that God can handle any vengeance that is necessary, and thus he prays that if Shimei's cursing is unjust, that God will make that known to David, and that David will be repaid with good for enduring the unjust cursing. David arrives at their destination absolutely exhausted. Think of the emotional wreck he must have been in. His beloved son, whom he forgave without discipline, is out to get him. David is bent over backwards to care for this son, and here he is being forced into exile again in order to allow his own son to live. Add to that the physical strain of the journey and then the toll that Shimei's cursing and stone throwing took on their state of mind. Well, you can imagine the state that David was in when he arrived. Yet he arrived at this destination and then, and this is very important, he took the time and refreshed himself. He rested. He made sure that he cared for the needs that he had so that he could keep going. He didn't push himself until he broke. He took the rest he needed when he could. So there's a couple of things to look at more closely here. When we are in a time of struggle and anxiety, we need to refrain from making any decisions that may have long-term impact. David reacts here to Ziba's information without verifying it. He doesn't even pause. He's stressed out, and seriously, this was the last thing on his mind. Not to mention the possibility that if Absalom succeeds in his plot, David's pronouncement won't matter anyway, because Absalom can do whatever he wants and change that decree. Still, David did have the option to say, I'm not going to deal with that right now. I'm running for my life and have no way to investigate your claims, so until I can check out your story, or until I'm dead, the land is still Mephibosheth's, and you can just deal with that. But how often do we do what David did? How often do we hear one side of a story and act without trying to verify the facts or question what has been told to us? I know I'm definitely guilty of it, especially if the side I hear seems logical and reasonable to me. Guess what? David did make a mistake here. Well, we will never know the whole truth, although we will hear Mephibosheth's side of the story later. But by then, it's impossible to tell who said or did what. If there's one thing we can learn from this interaction, it's this. Never decide a dispute when running into exile. The second thing to look at here is Shimei. Now, if you haven't met a Shimei in your life, you most likely will one day. If you haven't been a Shimei in someone else's life, I pray that you never will. God can use us all wherever we are at. Shimei, in this instance, took the opportunity to verbally attack David when David was already at a low point. He's very lucky to have escaped with his life. On the other hand, our perceptions of this world color every interaction we have. It's not too far of a leap for one of us to become a Shimei and to allow our perceptions to color everything we do far too far, until we end up walking the road beside David, venting our anger. David here waited to take any action against Shimei. He was ready for God's rebuke, if that was what Shimei's words were, but he also knew that if this wasn't a rebuke from God, that God could handle the rest. David did deserve a rebuke for not dealing with the issues in his own household until it got to this point, but David is being maligned here for purely spurious reasons. Still, God can work through all of this. God is so much bigger than Shimei. David knows that. Perhaps there is something he needs to learn from Shimei, so he waits to see whether God is rebuking him or not. My question for us to ponder today, do we rush headlong into making decisions without having all the facts? Do we react from an emotionally charged place, or do we prayerfully consider our actions? I gotta tell you, I see myself doing this a lot with my parenting. When I'm tired and I just haven't anything left, I may say no to a very reasonable request from my children simply because I have a case of the I don't wanna's and I don't want to exert any more energy for anything else. It's accidental parenting, but it teaches my sons not fabulous lessons. It teaches them that my comfort is what's most important. I want to be more intentional than accidental in all that I do with my sons, and by God's grace, I'm able to fight that fleshly desire for my own comfort a little more every day. And also, how do you respond when you face critical or accusing words from others? Do you just write them off as, well, they didn't understand me? Do you attack them back? Or do you listen and go to God with concerns or accusations and ask Him to show you where the truth is at? It may be that there is 0% truth in what was spoken to you. It may be that there is 50% truth. It may be that there's 100% truth. But when we dismiss people out of hand as being haters, instead of carefully considering whether there's any truth there or not, we may miss something that God is trying to show us as we plug our ears and talk as loudly as we can so we can't hear any dissenting voices.
Well, thank you, Beth. And Beth's study guides, as well as the 10-minute podcasts of these presentations, are all available in our archives under the Bible Studies tab of our website, naomistable.com. Nancy and I will be back with more on this in just a moment.